I'm Alex Rodriguez.
And I'm Jason Kelly.
From Bloomberg, this is The Deal. Each week, you'll hear us in conversation with business icons.
This show will explore deal-making across sports, media, and entertainment.
That is a harsh lesson in business.
Sports is not as simple as bringing a bunch of big names together.
I didn't want to do another stomp you out speech.
It opened up so many more doors.
The show is called The Deal.
Listen to The Deal.
Listen to The Deal on Spotify.
With threats to our nation waiting around every corner, adaptability is more important than ever. When conditions change without notice, quick strategic thinking is crucial. And with obstacles consistently impending, determination is essential in overcoming them. It's this willingness, decisiveness, and resilience that sets Marines apart. With our fighting spirit, we don't just fight battles, we win them. Marines are the constant our nation counts on to fight the unknown. And through adaptable problem solving, we do just that. Learn more at Marines.com.
Welcome to Speak for Yourself from the Crib. Marcellus Wiley. Coming up, we'll tell you if the Cowboys owe Dak Prescott back pay and if Antonio Brown has finally been humbled. Right now, I'm joined by LeVar Arrington, and we're going to talk about Drew Brees once again, who stirred up a whole bunch of controversy last week with comments about protesting and disrespecting the flag. After apologizing for his comments, Brees was actually criticized by the president, but defended himself on Instagram, writing, quote, "Through my ongoing conversations with friends, teammates, and leaders in the Black community, I realize this is not an issue about the American flag. It has never been. We can no longer use the flag to turn people away or distract them from the real issues that face our Black communities." Adrian Peterson defended Brees as well and said he thinks all NFL players will take a knee together this season. And even Roger Goodell addressed the issue, offering a message of solidarity to the players.
We, the National Football League, condemn racism and the systematic oppression of Black people. We, the National Football League, admit we were wrong for not listening to NFL players earlier and encourage all to speak out and peacefully protest. We, the National Football League, believe Black lives matter. I personally protest with you and want to be part of the much needed change in this country. We are listening. I am listening. And I will be reaching out to players who have raised their voices and others on how we can improve and go forward for a better and more united NFL family.
LeVar, how should the NFL address the anthem issue this season?
Well, first of all, it's great that people are coming out and addressing it so clearly and so head on, right, Marcellus? I mean, for so long, people danced around the topic itself and said, there is an issue. We need to address the issue. How do we address the issue? Well, it's being called out by name now. You know, Black lives do matter. To hear Roger Goodell say that is a tremendous step forward with what's taking place. I think where things are right now for the NFL to do this the right way, the players and the owners and Roger Goodell have to come together, collectively put together the messaging. What do we really, really want this messaging to be that resonates from the National Football League? We saw them already take a step forward with Anquan Boldin with his commercial during the Super Bowl. And how it was inspiring for change. The tragic happening with Anquan's cousin, Corey Jones. So we saw that they've already been proactively thinking this way, Marcellus. But the best way to maximize this is while everybody is listening and everybody is watching, you have to make sure that that message is concise, it's accurate, and really no surprises, right? Have the conversation so guys don't come out doing their own thing where it takes away from the collective unity of what this moment is presenting.
Well, let me answer the question first. I think the NFL right now, in full sway, using all of its powers and resources, listens to its players and supports the player coalition that it helped create. That's answering the question. But let's get deeper than just answering this question, because it's been many and many a years this has been the same problem, the same issue, and nothing has answered it. I want America right now to receive a challenge which is for America to go out there and walk and chew gum at the same damn time. Like, right now, I want to break this down into three tiers in terms of those challenges, and everyone is involved in this challenge. The first one is the NFL. NFL, you have a players' coalition. You've given over $90-plus million to that players' coalition. You've given them tremendous support, and you've given them a platform to now let's amplify that voice. And it's an outward, inward challenge that I'm presenting to everybody. In terms of the NFL, the outward challenge is to support the player coalition as it protests, as it tries to create policy change. I just signed on to a petition for the players' coalition that is going to try its best to end qualified immunity. That gives the police umbrella of coverage and protection that doesn't allow them to feel the full accountability of their actions. I want everyone to understand what that means. NFL continue to support the player coalition outwardly. But inwardly, it's time to amplify those voices and to hear what those messages really are. It's not just about, okay, the anthem or the flag and what's going to happen during that ceremony. It's let's get proactive and carve out space, carve out energy, carve out time right now, not waiting till September kickoff to make sure that these voices are clearly heard. Now, my second one is to the Players Coalition itself, Black Lives Matter as well. As we outwardly want to push and protest and have policy change and make sure that that lands in the proper place and has tremendous impact and effect, I want us to also make sure we address our own backyard in terms of work, in terms of service, in terms of changing that paradigm and those core values in our neighborhoods that we represent. No longer can we devalue what's happening in our own neighborhoods by protesting what's happening to us from the outside forces. Just lost a teammate this weekend, Rashay Caldwell. It's happened countless amount of times. I'm a guy who has a resume that has seen so much of this self-inflicted violence. And I'm not going to stop the energy that is going to change policy, change protests, and support Black Lives Matter. But I want to make sure we don't face the resistance. And I'm hearing a lot of that resistance from people who are saying, hey, put some of that energy in terms of what you're doing towards your own community. Issue challenge. I never grew up with brothers, LeVar. I have four uncles. Mm-hmm. Three of them lost to the streets in violence. So when I hear the statistics that say police brutality under 1% and the statistics of black-on-black violence over 90% in terms of killings, I want everyone to know that I'm not a sellout. I'm not a coon. But I do fear for my life in my own neighborhoods as well as I fear when a policeman pulls me over. We need to address both as well. My last challenge is to everyone else, the fans, the citizens, people who are sitting there safely saying, oh, you're talking about the NFL and you're talking about players. You're not talking about me. Oh, yes, I am. I want to let everybody know about the three T's. Time, talent, treasure. No matter what the initiative is, if it's racism, underprivileged kids, underserved communities, Me Too movement, bullying, whatever it is, everyone has to give the three T's. You got to give your time, you got to give your talent, you got to give your treasure. Because it's not good enough to not be the problem. That was a mistake by many that a lot are now apologizing for. Step one is to not be the problem. Step two is to help those affected by that problem. And step three is to change the attitudes of those who are causing that problem. If we all could take those challenges, and it's all of us, if we could take those challenges, LeVar, now you got my support and my full approval.
Yeah. Man, powerful words, powerful delivery. You know, and again, the more you look at what the opportunity is right now, again, I'm going to continue to ring the bell of consistency. It was not easy to do this, you know, in 2016. People were mortified by people kneeling during the presentation of our flag and the national anthem. It seems to be more convenient. It's easier now that we've gotten out of the way of the tragic situations of careers ending, the collateral damage, so to speak, of what took place when people were silently and peacefully protesting. So for me, I love those challenges. I also would continue to urge that be consistent, be unified, so unified, in fact, that it's not mistaken for a demonstration of sorts that's a part of the show, right? The worst thing you could do is do something in a way where people become tone deaf to what it is that's taking place. So, you know, listen, guys could come out and put a black glove on and put their fist up in the air to show solidarity to what's taking place. If that's what you're going to do, then everybody needs to do it. You know, I think we're in a place now where you don't have to take it as an individual. You know, for what it's worth, whether you like it or not, Kaepernick opened up the floodgates on it being okay, because obviously it costed him an opportunity possibly to play in the league. And so now where you have Roger Goodell coming out and saying that, we hear you, we got it wrong, let's come together, let's figure it out. Be together on what it is and be impactful on what it is, Marcellus, because ultimately, if it is just a show, then it's just a show. If we're working for something that's going to have results, then you're going to hit results. And that is the challenge of what the players have to have real conversations with the owner and the league itself with Roger Goodell.
Exactly, man. I'm tired of the BS. I'm tired of seeing social media one way and then my group texts and my DMs a different way. I'm tired of seeing soldiers out there saying, yeah, I'm with the cause, but I'm tired of hearing people who are not with supporting human rights in part because they don't see that the other side is really addressing their own backyard. I'm just getting tired of getting caught in the crossfire of conversation instead of direct, concise action, which you're supporting. People got to remember that societies grow because of conflicts of thoughts and conflicts in words and conflicts in action. That's how societies have grown over the time during human civilization. Like, that's just how you keep evolving. You layer this conversation. And Colin Kaepernick was another layer to this conversation. But for all the people who put all their hopes and aspirations and all of their despair on Colin Kaepernick, you did yourself a disservice. I was born in 1974. Sorry, I was dealing with this issue well before Colin Kaepernick was even in the NFL. Well before Colin Kaepernick was even born, I had guns put to my head as a youngster by the police. I had guns drawn on me another time by the police. I've been shot at like 6 different occasions by my own people. So I'm not going to get caught in being on one side of the fence or the other. It's time to knock the damn fence down. So let's talk about who I am, because I want to personalize the story. You know, I'm a guy who won Man of the Year from the NFL 3 different times for my teams. I'm a man of service, y'all. Just last year, I was the Grand Marshal of the Compton City Parade. And a lot of times, I say things that is trying to bring us together, because if we're really going to rally, you can't do that without the word ally. It's in the damn word itself to rally. You need allies. We need everybody to bring in this and to be real about it. Stop trying to get the clicks and the likes. And then stop DMing me something completely 180 of that, and I got to protect your guilty ass. Because you don't really want to go out there and show that responsibility and that accountability. It's sickening, man. So when you look at this situation, what I see happening, not only in our country, but globally, is all the rigged systems and all the have-nots are now saying, I need you more than ever, the haves. And what I'm loving and am encouraged by is seeing the haves finally get the earwax out of their dome and starting to not only listen, but participate in respectful forward action.
Indeed. Indeed. No, I'm with you.
We got to keep it going, y'all.
I think that's it. Well,
yeah. The challenge is issued. The challenge is authenticity. Be real about this. If not, you will undermine any and all progress going forward. Coming up, Michael Irvin says the Cowboys owe Dak Prescott big time. We'll tell you what we think next. Speak for yourself, presented by Hyundai.
I'm Alex Rodriguez.
And I'm Jason Kelly.
From Bloomberg, this is The Deal. Each week, you'll hear us in conversation with business icons.
This show will explore deal-making across sports, media, and entertainment.
That is a harsh lesson in business.
Sports is not as simple as bringing a bunch of big names together.
I didn't want to do another stomp you out speech.
It opened up so many more doors.
The show is called The Deal.
Listen to The Deal.
Listen to The Deal on Spotify.
Welcome back to Speak for Yourself from the Crib, presented by Hyundai. Parcells Wiley here. Bar Arrington's in the building. And now we're joined by former Pro Bowl running back and long starter himself, Robert Smith. Let's move to Dallas, where the Cowboys and Dak Prescott still haven't agreed on a new deal. But now a Cowboy legend is weighing in. Michael Irvin claiming that the team owes Dak, quote, back pay, since they've gotten so much out of him the last four seasons. But actually paid the former fourth round pick less than $5 million. Ooh, Robert, coming to you first. You think this should play a role in Dak's negotiations?
It should play a role in negotiations. I mean, this is what you do as a player. This is what you do as an agent. You use everything at your disposal to try and get more money, right? That's what we always try and do. Now, let's be realistic, though, and look at what the Cowboys have done in the past with the contracts that they've given out. And, you know, what you can realistically expect, those may be different things. And, you know, obviously Dak and his agent, they're going to say, look at, you know, with the rookie wage scale, the way that it is, you guys underpaid him. You could have extended him. You could have done all these different things. But then the Cowboys are going to say, well, all right, well, you were 1-6 against playoff teams. And, you know, they're going to use everything negative that they can. But hey, that's part of it, right? It's never personal. It's always business.
Yeah, it definitely should play a role in his negotiations. Listen, he has outplayed his contract. It's a rookie contract, though. So let's be clear on this. That's what it is. Like, that's standard. It's not like they negotiated a contract that he's outplayed in his second contract or third contract. But yes, he has outplayed his rookie contract. Now, when you talk about should there be back pay or how big a deal should that be, he's been offered a tender that he's not signed yet. And they have not rescinded the tender yet. And that's $31 million. All right? You're talking about someone who's in their rookie contract made just over $2 million in the season. So my biggest question is, when Mike Irving says that, sure, I don't disagree with what he's saying, but what's that number? Where does it become you got paid your back pay? Because last I checked, I need a calculator to figure out what the percentage markup on your raise would be getting a $31 million raise with the tender. So where do we stop? What is back pay here? Because for me, if I was making $2 million back pay, give me $5 million and we good. You know, where we at here, right? But Marcellus, honestly, I just need to know, like, is it 40 million? Is it 39? Is it 41? What is it?
You know what? To answer what it is, first we have to have the conversation of, is he owed back pay? And let's just be real about this. There is a line item for back pay when it comes up in new and future contract situations. This is an age-old issue in the NFL. It's just Dak is really highlighting it because of how excessively good he played on how excessively bad he was compensated. That's where this conversation comes up. Mm. It's not reparations for Dak. We ain't going that damn far, but we understand that, hey, man, you're a fourth rounder who's made under less than $5 million in terms of compensation. And you sure have given us more than $5 million in terms of performance. So let's talk about some of those line items. We've all seen them before. It starts with production, but it doesn't end there. They start talking about your age, and then they get into trust and likability. And then, are we indebted to this guy? Let's be real about this. Jimmy G has never been the best quarterback in the NFL, let alone the best player, but he was once the highest paid player ever. Russell Wilson, who I truly respect and think is top five, not number one, wasn't number one, but is now the highest paid player. So it's always been this roller coaster in terms of compensation, but really an understanding of all the other inputs and line items that contribute to what that compensation is.
Yeah, I mean, here's the thing about Dak and the position in general. You know, I heard Urban talk about this last week in reference to college football and, you know, say it's a quarterback league. It's a quarterback sport, okay? And when you have a guy like Dak that's come in and he's outperformed expectations, sure, he's going to say, I want something more. I want some of that back pay. But again, it's always a negotiation, right? I don't know what that number is. And we hear so many stories. Yeah, he turned down this and he was offered that. And then somebody comes back and says, well, no, that wasn't really true. He wasn't really offered that. We don't really know what those conversations have been. We don't know what he's turned down in the past. We don't know if he didn't accept some sort of extension in the past that would have gotten him out of that rookie wage scale contract. We just don't know. But I know this. The man's been incredible. I loved watching him play at Mississippi State. He definitely has outperformed my expectations. You know, in that system that he ran at Mississippi State, more of a runner, and he's been one of the best deep ball passers in the league and reliable. There, one of only four or five quarterbacks in the league that have started every game over the last 4 years. And we know more than anything else at the quarterback position, it's about consistency and it's about reliability.
I love everything you guys have said, but I just have to reiterate this one more time. He's made just over $2 million this past season. We may not know what has been offered, and I'm not a hater. I promise. I'm not hating. But the tender on the table is for $31 million. Will you agree with me that we know that figure is $31 million? That is a whole lot of millions in between that two and that 31. So all I'm saying is how much back pay are we seeking here with the regular pay that you're seeking with this new contract? That's all I'm looking for on this. I mean, he has played well. He has outplayed the contract. But the reality here is, what is a realistic raise markup for his contract right now, today?
Look, I'm going to tell you like this, simple and short. Dak's going to get paid more than he's worth. All right, told you the reasons why. When my contract was up, my first one as a free agent, I got the second highest amount for defensive ends. Let me give you guys a little insight. I wasn't the second best defensive end. It doesn't have to correlate exactly, guys. So let's talk about the quarterback that I mentioned before, Jimmy G. And despite getting to the Super Bowl last year, there are still doubts about Jimmy G. And there were even some reports this offseason that the 49ers might be looking to trade him. But head coach Kyle Shanahan is trying to put all those doubts to rest, saying he thinks Jimmy G can be one of the greatest quarterbacks of all time. Robert, you have an issue with Shanahan saying this?
No, I don't have an issue with it at all. And let's remember, when the coaches have these press conferences, they're not just talking to the media. They're talking to their players. They're talking to the fans. And he wants Jimmy to have that pressure. Now, he said, look, if we can do the things around him and if he has the ability, then he can be one of the greatest ever. And how are quarterbacks measured? Ultimately, it's by wins and titles, right? And he came very close last year, had his opportunities, you know, missed that throw. And part of this may be just that throw. Think about that throw with a minute 30 in that Super Bowl. He makes that completion right there. We might be talking about something completely different right now. So I think this is Kyle Shanahan saying, I want this guy to have the pressure because I know that he wants that pressure. And he said that. I know Jimmy. He knows him, and he knows that saying something like this puts that extra pressure on him. Then it's about preparation, and then it's also about the people around him. Do you want this to be one of the historic, or do you want this team moving forward to be what the 49ers were in the past with Joe Montana, with Steve Young? I mean, you get that type of focus as a team around him, then he becomes the greatest by those results.
Yes, I have a problem with it. Because it's gassing him up. You're gassing him up, and you know he ain't the best ever. You know he don't have the chance to be the greatest ever. Your dad coached one of the greatest ever. You grew up seeing John Elway play. You know what greatest ever looks like. Come on. I sit there. I have moments of declaration with my children every single day. I tell them that the sky is the limit. All right? I tell them what they can accomplish, how beautiful they are, how great their personalities are. And some of the things that I'm telling them, I know they ain't that just yet. It may never be that. But I'm going to gas them up because you know what? If you aim for the sun and the moon, if you come up short, you're going to hit the stars, right? So for me, I have a problem with this. He's not a child. All right. Here's the deciding factor for me. I know people have had problems with Jimmy G and have put him out there. I know people look at how the offense was played in the Super Bowl and if Jimmy G was going to be the greatest ever. I know he missed that pass, but you went into total preservation mode on trying not to lose the game versus trying to win the game in the Super Bowl. Everybody uses it as an argument, all of the speculation. Mm. All I'm saying is the only reason why I have a problem with this is that is a grown-ass man that we're talking about, and you don't need to baby step on saying, if you want to be the greatest, be the greatest. I'd rather him say, if you want to be the greatest, Jimmy G. Yeah. That's all I'm saying.
Yeah, Shanahan got me torn over here because I hear what he's doing. I see the dad in him coming out, like you said, LeVar. But, hey, Coach, actions speak louder than words. You had a chance to show us that this guy has GOAT potential by trusting him in the fourth quarter. Despite the missed throws, you still could have trusted in him even more so if he has GOAT potential in your head. But for everybody out there, the reason why I don't like these comments is because a lot of times we get focused on a goal and the macro of the goal. And you're supposed to really focus in on the micro of the goal, baby steps. How about Jimmy G just, I don't know, be the best in his own damn division? Let's start there. We're not even talking about one of the greatest of all time. How about there's a four-team division and he's not even number one yet? So we understand where you're trying to get him to, but wow, the pulling of Jimmy G in terms of this level of pressure and the level of criticism that's coming with it, I think was just unnecessary. So as I look at football, especially the quarterback position, the GOATs are not announced. They just arrive. Joe Montana, third rounder. Mm. Oh, damn, look at Joe Montana. Tom Brady, sixth rounder.
Take it.
You wouldn't have bet on him early. Oh, my God, look at him. He's the GOAT. If Jimmy G's going to be there, if he's going to get to the top of that mountain, it's not going to be because you at the bottom yelling he's going to get up there. It's going to be because of him getting it with his own muscle and climbing that mountain. Antonio Brown claims he's finally on a new path. We'll tell you if we're buying it. Next, Speak for Yourself, presented by Under.
I ain't buying them jeans.
Welcome back to Speak for Yourself from the crib. Marcellus Wiley, presented by Hyundai. Joined now by LeVar Arrington and TJ Houshmandzadeh, the receiver himself. Let's stay at that position and talk about Antonio Brown, who is still hoping to launch a comeback and has been trying to improve his image lately by associating with longtime friend and mentor Deion Sanders. AB has been working out with Primetime and took to Instagram this weekend to thank the Hall of Famer for all his help, not just on the field, but off, writing, "I now see that Antonio is just as great as AB. I just needed to prove that to myself." TJ, you think that AB has finally been humbled?
I thought he was humbled sitting the whole year out. When you go an entire year out of football, and we've seen some, I would say, flip-flopping during the season. He'll put out a statement, and you say, oh, he's turned a corner. And then he'll do something else where you're not so sure. But I'm 100% in belief that he's been humbled. The NFL will move on without you, and I think he thought there was a chance that he would get back in. He's starting to realize, like, and I'm sure this is what Prime alluded to him was, bro, this game doesn't need you. It will move on without you. And so Prime gave him game to let him know, you better get your act together because you're on the back nine. You're not on the front nine. You're on the back nine. And when they start talking about your personality more than your performance, it's a problem. So, yes, I believe he's been humbled. I believe he should be given another opportunity to play in the league. And when he does, he'll be one of the best receivers in the league like he was when he was in there.
Yeah, I'm with TJ on this one. And listen, I think he's been more humbled, if anything, by having that opportunity to go live in country prime. And more importantly than humbled, I think he had a rebirth. I think he had an awakening of sorts. Going there, I've been around prime during All-American week with Under Armour, and the things that I've been able to learn from him, being there with him all week and listening to what he has to say and the stories he has to tell and putting things in the proper order and the proper perspective, AB got that times a million. You're staying in his home. You're eating his food. You're fishing in his pond. You're shooting up the snakes that are getting in the chicken coop. He needed to be in a safe place to have an opportunity to fairly take a good hard look at who he is versus who he really wants to be. And I think Prime gave him the opportunity to do so. And whether it was as 100% genuine or not, I think the reality of it is the optics of it looked very good. And I feel as though having that experience and having that influence from someone who has been as great an ambassador to being a great person versus just being a football player in Deion, I think this has really probably had a profound impact on AB and moving forward with what that could possibly be.
Mm. These are the lyrics to the song of humility. That's what AB is singing right now. Do I believe he's been humbled? Yes. Do I think there still will be missteps going forward? Unfortunately, yes as well, because it's not a binary situation when you talk about changing how you value yourself. It really highlights my favorite quote ever by Mark Twain. Life is a competition between you and yourself. A lot of sports psychologists will talk about that. You get caught up a lot of times in who's behind you, who's in front of you, who's next to you. But really, you're only competing against your damn self. And AB, for so long, unfortunately, felt that people cheered the loudest when he had a ball in his hand, not when he just walked in the house or walked around as Antonio Brown, not a persona of AB, the football wide receiver. And a sports psychologist will also tell you, if you don't improve the value and love you have for yourself as a person, you're going to always limit the potential you present as a player. Sounds like AB is learning that lesson, unfortunately, the hard way.
Well, when you look at it, too, he has to get reinstated. We're talking about, has he been humbled in this and that? People forget he was suspended and indefinitely. And so with what's going on in the world, you had the coronavirus, and now we have what's going on with George Floyd and his senseless murder. There's things on the agenda that far are more important than what's going on with AB. Number one, he needs to get reinstated. The commissioner has to reinstate him and say, okay, Antonio Brown, we will allow you to play football again before we can even see him on the field. And Marcellus, what you talked about is we as athletes, you see yourself as a player and people love you and they applaud you for what you do on the field. And then once those 3 hours is up and that game is over, do they have that same appreciation for you? Or better yet, do you have it for yourself? Are you as great of a person as you are a player? And for some reason, a lot of guys, they need justification or approval on both sides of that instead of getting it for themselves first. And so until they have that or until he has that, this will always be a problem. And hopefully going down there with Prime is helped them with that.
You know, just to expand on the point of the protests and what happened to George Floyd, AB had interactions with the law. He had some real heated exchanges with the law. On IG, on social media platforms, you're seeing some of these things play out with AB. I think looking at the humility card from the standpoint of people could be protesting about AB getting taken down. And it wasn't right. For all the things that he did wrong or all the things he did right, he didn't deserve to go out the way that he went out. We could very easily be having those type of conversations right now based off of some of the situations that AB found himself in. So when you talk about moving forward and having possibly the opportunity to be reinstated, he will get reinstated. You know why? Because Deion Sanders is going to be an advocate for him to get back in. Whether he gets suspended, commissioner's exemption list, whatever it may be, based upon what the law of the land says, that's a whole nother conversation. But as far as being humbled by seeing what's going on in our world today with the protests and the voice and the outcries for equality and justice, and you have been not as responsible as you could possibly be in those categories, now rap songs and videos don't seem so important anymore. Now, you know, being so loud about being bodacious about what I represent don't seem so important anymore. What's important is, how do I view myself, as it was mentioned? How do I view my children? How do I view my community? How do I view what I bring to the table? What's that value? And I think AB has been forced to take a really good, hard reality look at himself, and that's going to make all the difference, in my opinion.
Exactly, man. Preach on it. I'm just wanting to applaud Deion Sanders and applaud AB for this courageous moment. And a lot of people may not like AB and not see the courage in this moment, but we're up here right now talking sports. We've been on the field before, on the grass, on the turf, all the bumps and bruises from it. And it's interesting, as we're having a humility conversation about AB, he's having an identity revelation conversation. And for anybody who's ever been through that, man, that is a deep experience. So respect for AB, no matter how this plays out, man, for taking that inner challenge. But I want to tell all the youth out there, this is a teaching moment. You are not a football player. You are someone who plays football. Take advantage of all the opportunities and resources that come from it. Too many times you realize that when it's like AB, maybe too late, and you can't be that guy. And I'm so thankful and so grateful that I had people in my life when I was a high school senior who told me to bet on my brain and don't bet on my body. Don't bet on ball. Bet on your brain, brother, and bet on yourself in terms of identity. I'm glad AB is on that path. Let's see how it turns out. Coming up, Conor McGregor,
preacher,
as he retiring from UFC again. We'll tell you if there's any reason to take him seriously this time next. Speak for Yourself is presented by Hyundai. Though some of our favorite sports may be on hold, horse racing is still running strong. Live coverage of top-tier races on FS1 and FS2 throughout June. You can enjoy horse racing from top tracks across the country all month long. Visit americasbestracing.net/strong to learn more. And welcome back to Speak for Yourself. Marcel Swiley, joined by LeVar Harrington, TJ Houshmandzadeh, and now let's go to UFC and Conor McGregor, who just announced again, that he's retiring from fighting. Oh, this is third time announcing that he's going to hang it up. So a lot of people out there are taking it with a grain of salt. But he took to Twitter with the announcement, writing, quote, "Hey guys, I've decided to retire from fighting. Thank you all for the amazing memories. What a ride it's been. Here is a picture of myself and my mother in Las Vegas post one of my world title wins. Pick the home of your dreams, Mavs. I love you. Whatever you desire, it's yours." TJ, you taking Conor seriously this time?
No, he's not retired. Did you read the quote? He said, let me pull this up. He says,
"Okay,
they should have just kept the ball rolling. I mean, why are they pushing Khabib and Justin for? I laid out a plan, a method that was the right move, the right method to go with, and they want to balk at that and not make it happen or just drag it on. Whatever I say, they want to go against it to show some kind of power." He's mad. He's throwing a temper tantrum. "I want to do this. Dana White doesn't agree with it. I want to fight this guy. Dana White doesn't agree with it. Okay, Dana White, I'm a retire now." So he's throwing a temper tantrum. He'll be back. He has a whiskey. Proper 112, I believe that's the name of it. In order for that whiskey to continue to be successful, he needs to fight. He needs to be in the spotlight. And so he'll be back fighting. He's just throwing a temper tantrum. He's pissed off. Dana White has pissed him off. And this is his way of getting back at Dana White.
Yeah, I definitely think it's a leverage play as well. I would not bet the house or the bank on him being staying in retirement. I mean, he's like the Floyd Mayweather of the UFC. He's polarizing. He's entertaining. People love some Conor McGregor, and he is frustrated, and he is upset that they haven't listened to him. So this definitely has leverage play written all on it. But there was also something else that he said that was very interesting. And it could play a part in why he said, I'm going to retire, is he doesn't like the fact that there's no fans. He didn't like the empty. He went to a couple of the shows. He did not like it. It bored him. He didn't feel the energy. And he's definitely a mob-driven dude. He has his mob. I mean, we went to that Tyson Fury-Deontay Wilder fight. I mean, the type of followings dudes like Conor McGregor and Tyson Fury had, I wouldn't want to fight if I had that type of following and my peeps couldn't be there. So he doesn't want to get caught up into having to fight a fight before the fans are able to come back in and populate them fights. And I think that that's a strategic play to say, hey, I'm out, I'm retired. Y'all not going to put me on no fight card and my people ain't coming here to see me fight. So I think it's a little bit of leverage to what TJ said, but I think it's also a little bit of leverage to the fact that he doesn't want to take any fights where he wasted not having the fans around to witness it.
Look, my first instinct was, nah, don't take him seriously. But then I started to think about it, and I was like, oh, hell yeah, he dead set. I get the temper tantrum angle because of the timing. But y'all got to remember who Conor McGregor is. And we all know that incentives shape behavior. And in this situation, he is incentivized right now to probably not fight again. Think about it. In the octagon, his next two fights, Justin and Khabib. That's probably 0-2 in terms of brand building. He ain't going to win, certainly against Khabib, even in a rematch, let alone the way Justin looked last time. I don't know about that one either. And then let's look outside the octagon. What's going on with Conor McGregor? Proper whiskey. That is the fourth most popular selling brand of whiskey in the world. Whoa. Fourth, that means dough is coming, and more dough in the future.
He already made his money.
I'm gonna ask you guys, you former combat sports, hey, you combatant sports participants, let me ask you this: if you can make way more dough without taking all of these L's, would you do it?
You for sure going. You don't have to get punched in the face. You don't have to kill yourself in training. It's a no brainer, but. Can you sell some more cases of that proper whiskey if you're in the ring? Then you know that's going to be the case. He wants to fight Khabib. He wants to fight Justin Gaethje. I believe that's how you pronounce the name. And then also been proposed that he can fight Anderson Silva. Conor McGregor is to the point now where he can pick who he wants to fight. Dana White in the UFC has always picked who they fought. Like, guys very rarely have any say-so in who gets to fight. And so it's one of those things where Conor McGregor is the biggest star in the UFC. He's tired of Dana White telling him what to do. He's trying to flex his muscle. And, LeVar, you're right about that. He wants to – when you see those Irish – the Irish people come over and the men and the women that – for that – man, that Fury fight and just imagine how they are.
We dealt with it.
You talk about the mob. They are the mob. And so –
yes.
That energy that they bring to him, but if he could fight the guys that he wants to fight, he's fighting whether the mob is there or not, in my opinion.
I think he needs the mob. I think just short and sweet. He doesn't want to be put into... Imagine if he got put to sleep in the fight, right? Like, and you're all by yourself. And that is the end of your career? You got knocked out by yourself? I mean, I at least want my people there to pick me up. Like, wake up, Conor. Wake up. You know, wake up. You can sell as many proppers as you like. But I think he's going to fight again when the fans can come back.
Hey, don't forget, as Dana White is terming this, it's a pandemic panic. John Jones is doing the same thing. Guys are acting a little strange right now in terms of what they want. Dana White's there to remind them, this is a $4 billion-plus industry. We are bigger than the individuals. Coming up, we'll have our latest approval ratings for Conor McGregor, and Uncle Jimmy will tell us what he thinks of Conor's retirement. Next! Don Dada, I see. Welcome back to Speak for Yourself from the Crib, joined now by Uncle Jimmy. Uncle, yes, Conor McGregor just retired for the third time. You taking Conor McGregor seriously this time?
Check this out, young fella. This is the very reason they tell you, don't get high off your own supply, okay? See, not only do Conor McGregor make his own whiskey, Conor McGregor also got a drinking problem, all right? Who in the hell gonna put an Irishman in charge of a whiskey company? That make about as much sense as putting a brother in charge of a check cashing company. In other words, you already know it's gonna be some abuse. It's just a matter of how bad it's gonna get. Conor McGregor is crazy as hell, so I don't know if he's retiring or not. Here's what I do know. It's a whole lot of folks just retiring out of thin air lately.
A lot of room to breathe right now. That's it for us. Stay safe.